Hey, what do you know? Do you know enough to pass the citizenship test given to immigrants applying for U.S. citizenship? Well, okay, here's a question for you. What powers belong to each state and not the federal government? Well, let's find out. This is Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma. My guest today is State Senator Yasmin Trudeau, the senator for the 27th Legislative District. Hello, Senator.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being with us and helping us understand the Constitution. Now, you've been working in Olympia as state senator for the 27th Legislative District, so you would know what powers the states have. Can you illuminate some of that for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So part of the relationship between the federal government and the state government is that unless it's specifically outlined in the Constitution or it's there have been decisions that a particular issue lands with the federal government. You could, and this is obviously a broad generalization. States sort of assume everything else. So where it is that you'll often find federal funding. Everyone talks about federal funding. So a lot of things come with federal funding, and that can attach to some federal requirements, but it flows through the states. And then the states sort of develop laws related to housing, to policing, to licensing, zoning and land use. So those are, I'd say that those are spaces that the state has the opportunity and the responsibility to weigh in on. One example, if I might, that people get confused about a lot, it's a good example, is around immigration. So Congress has plenary powers over immigration, which means that a state cannot change a person's status or provide opportunities for a status change for immigration, but they can do things to support immigrant communities. So we can have funding for refugee resettlement coming from the state. We can, sort of determine who has opportunities for licensing and what those schemes look like, as long as they don't run afoul with what the federal government has already done.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah. So it sounds like in the Constitution, it says that anything that's not listed in the Constitution is reserved to the states.
That's a broad generalization. So for example, you would think of the Constitution as the floor, right? So you can't go past a certain place. There are spaces where for right to privacy, the other rights that are taken from the constitutional and but states have weighed in and have created different privacy rights stronger than what has been recognized by the courts in the Constitution.
Okay. And because it sounds like that there's so many things that have arisen since the Constitution was written. One of the answers in the citizenship test for the question of the rights reserved to the states are the states are allowed to give driver's licenses.
Right.
And I highly suspect that was not the case in 1798. So really the state ends up with broad powers.
Yes, very broad powers. And you'll see throughout history that depending on sort of what side of an issue you're on, some folks like that and some folks don't. So civil rights, for example, right? A lot of states' rights advocates were coming forward and saying, federal government, don't weigh in on the space. Let the states decide how they want to address civil rights. I think that's an example, right, where the federal government decided, well, no, I think this is an issue primarily because the states are all part of this country, right? So there was,
Sure.
how do you offer civil rights in one area, one state, not another state? It just created a lot of issues. So, but then you see that flipped in recent years as well, where the federal government may be making decisions that the states believe are go against our fundamental civil rights. And so states are stepping in to create stronger protections, like in Washington.
Sure. And it seems like an issue is whether or not any of these rights would cross state lines.
Is a big deal. So anything that crosses or has the potential to cross state lines, that is where the federal government would argue, usually primarily, not always, right? But that's where they come in, because that no longer that interstate commerce, the relationship between the two states, that is where the federal government has very broad authority.
You've been in the state legislature for a while now, and from what I understand, each legislator serves on committees. From what I've read, you're on a bunch of committees.
Yeah, I asked for three, and I was really lucky that I got all three of them. you know, the three that I chose were the three that I really felt like were important to my community for a number of reasons, but housing, human services, and law and justice, which is the Senate's public safety committee. You know, they all intersect each other and they all impact our community members here in Tacoma and broadly in Pierce County. So I was really lucky to be able to get on those committees, and we'll see what happens. We're going to have an opportunity to weigh in whether people stay on the same committees or not here in about a month.
What are some of the things that come out of the committee work that you've done?
Sure. So, you know, the Law and Justice Committee is the highest volume, sort of highest traffic committee that's in the state Senate. It is, you know, in the House, they actually separated out to public safety and judiciary. But in the Senate, it's all one committee. We look at everything from reproductive justice to gun violence prevention to catalytic converter theft to, I mean, just really anything that is a public safety issue that impacts on a statewide level, you're going to see that in front of the Law and Justice Committee if someone brings brings legislation to change something.
So has there been legislation that's been passed while you've been serving?
Oh, yeah. A number of pieces of legislation, you know, and one of the myths, I think, that came out of this session is that that the state is still such a partisan place. And actually, it's over 90% of the pieces of legislation are bipartisan. Right. There's going to be a few key issues that people obviously strongly disagree with. But, you know, I mentioned the catalytic converter theft. And, you know, this was a really interesting conversation because there was legislation to increase the penalties, the criminal penalties. For catalytic converter theft. And then there was another piece of legislation that did have some penalties in it, not necessarily criminal penalties, but it also looked at addressing the demand for catalytic converters. Because as we all know, and this is, you know, in my humble opinion, we end up having a revolving door system where folks who are, if there is a demand and someone is experiencing, you know, some sort of crisis, whether that's substance abuse, that homelessness, whatever it is that's happening to them, and continuing to put criminal penalties, heavy criminal penalties, is not, in my mind, an effective deterrent. We already have criminal penalties and it doesn't deter people. So how do we really get at the root causes? At an instance, it was demand.
Well, it seems like that dovetails into some of the other work you've done on housing and whatnot, because it seems to me that the root cause of crime is poverty. I mean, just to put it in a real blunt term.
No, absolutely. And that's why, you know, when we think of what type of penalties we put in place, you know, it's really, I think context matters. And oftentimes the law and policy doesn't really consider that. So when I bring my perspective, I try to think about that piece of it. Right. And I think there are really very good legal professionals that are starting to think more about that as well, which is why we've had such an uptick in the interest in community courts, for example, and therapy courts. Because I think people recognize that a lot of times it is really a matter of circumstance rather than anything else. So how do we improve an individual's circumstance so that we can actually get at the root causes and work on crime prevention?
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of an old Joan Baez song that says, "There but for fortune go you or I."
Right.
And I know that from your statement in the voters pamphlet, you've had that experience. You grew up with poverty and violence.
I have. In fact, my mom is only 14 years older than I am and never learned to read or write. So it's, and now, you know, and the reason I say that, you know, now she's, I'm an attorney and I'm a state senator. My brother's a dentist. You know, my mom, I really call myself the product of early intervention and state services. So I got, you know, I was put into a program when I was 12 years old. I got to go outdoors. I got to rock climb. You know, I was a foster youth, but that also connected me to other services that we've actually discontinued in this state. And I'm wondering, you know, how we can dig in and sort of relook at what worked in my life and what we are and are not offering now to our youth. But I think to your point, when you are in a place of despair, and poverty really is a place of despair. Not only that, but it also causes severe trauma. There is, you know, there's a lot of information out there about PTSD that comes with just the survival instinct that you have to have when you grow up in poverty. So I want to offer, you know, I always say that I was very lucky, but I don't think that we should base opportunities off luck. How can we then offer that same thing to other folks?
Yeah. Oh, well said. Thank you. Well, you know, coming back to a couple of other less traumatic subjects, there have been some issues that your constituents have brought to you, and you've had a good deal of success in helping them out in those cases. Can you go into some of that for us?
Sure. Since we talked about housing, I have one bill. So, you know, full disclosure, it was actually my mom, who is here in the 27th, doesn't live in the same place where this incident happened. But a couple of years ago, maybe about two at this point, she had moved into a townhouse where the property management company said, well, you have to pay your rent electronically. Here's the link to the portal, figure it out. Now, my mom being of limited English proficiency, having, you know, really barely engaged online, she had to set up an email. She said with her caregiver. Her caregiver missed a letter in the email. So she wasn't notified that there was an error in the processing. And so she was charged twice for rent. Now, on top of that, when you use an electronic portal, oftentimes there's a payment associated with paying your rent. So now you're paying a fee to pay the rent, which is just, to me, fundamentally unfair. But when it came to me, I remember just stewing on this and thinking, like, what can be done? And then it was the next thing I know, I was in the state Senate.
Yeah.
So I worked with one of the housing staffers at the time and worked with the landlords, the Rental Housing Association, worked with tenants' rights folks. And ultimately what we agreed on was landlords want their rent, and whatever the best way to get that rent is, they're going to be supportive of that. And tenants, those burdens, it can be really high. Again, my mom thankfully had me and had my brother to sort of lift her up and out of the situation that double charge caused her, because then that goes into late fees. And then you know, it's just a mess if you've ever been in that situation where you've had an overdraft on something. But most people don't, right? Many people do not, especially if they're living with limited means. And so I introduced the bill, and then I heard from folks all around the state. I actually heard from people within manufactured home communities, seniors on fixed income, and they said, would you consider us? I just got a notice that we're going to electronic portal. I've never used the internet. I'm just terrified. I use checks. And so we were able to, what seems like a really simple solution, right, ended up being so effective because it impacted so many folks that I didn't realize. But often when you are talking to a community member, it's very rare that an issue that they face is not also being faced by others. So it was a really incredible opportunity. And now you can pay your rent in whatever manner you would like to pay your rent in, as long as it gets paid. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Oh, hooray. That is so wonderful. I'm sure. Oh, gosh. So there's also another bill that you got passed that is really a lot more close to home to you. You said that you have a 3-month-old child?
I do.
Oh, my gosh. And you also said that you were the first sitting legislator to have a child while serving
in the Senate. In the state house, all credit due to Lisa Brown. She actually changed some of the rules when she was in the state house to bring a baby on the floor. Before, you weren't allowed to actually bring a baby. And so she got that change. And then Jessen Farrell, actually in the house, then was able to bring her baby, as you know. So it's, but in the state Senate, it's never happened. My colleagues have been wonderful. To be, you know, just frank, on both sides of the aisle, my colleagues have been really great, but I haven't brought the baby yet. So, you know, bringing the baby in.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of stuff that goes along with that.
Yeah.
But then you've also passed a law concerning that. Could you explain?
Sure. I may get emotional on this one because it's still hitting pretty close to home a couple months after giving birth. But I was brought an idea. Well, maybe I'll back up a little bit. So with my first child, I had real issues related to severe gestational diabetes and other physical problems that did not allow me to produce breast milk right away. And they were really worried about my baby's sugars. And so they couldn't wait, right? Like you normally would for a baby with colostrum or whatever. So they ended up giving him a bottle of formula. A couple of things happened as a result of that. One is he had some adverse skin reactions like eczema. And so that was the first time I actually had looked into the fact that bovine milk products are really not healthy for babies right at the beginning. And then there was nipple confusion, flow confusion. It was just a mess. And I was super emotional about it. Really difficult 6 months for me as a new mom. And then when I joined the state Senate, there was conversation of two neonatologists. So amazing. They're actually a father-daughter neonatologist team. The daughter has 3 young children. And I was connected with them about the issue of providing insurance coverage for donor milk. So they had, it was actually an idea that they, because of what they saw in the field, especially for our newest babies and our tiny preemie babies, they thought, well, why don't we make it more accessible, right? And really start off all our Washingtonians, not just those with the most privilege or access to things like donor milk. How can we make sure everybody starts off on the same foot? So fast forward, I got the bill passed. It was a strong bipartisan support bill, or strongly supported on both sides of the aisle. I had calls from legislators, women legislators, actually from before, current, Republican, Democrat, that had crying stories about how painful this issue was for them. And then after it passed, I was, because it got signed into law, what, 90 days after passage, so June-ish. And July 12th, I had the same issue when my baby was born.
Oh.
And yeah, it was incredible. And the lactation specialist came in and said, well, you know, we carry donor milk now as a standard of practice because it's covered by insurance. And I started crying. And my husband was like, are you going to tell them? And I was like, just give me a moment. Yes, I'm going to tell them. But also, in this moment, I'm a mom. And in this moment, I'm a big mom. And I needed to just sit with that. But that was probably the single most affirming moment about my decision to become a legislator.
Oh, my gosh. I have no words.
It's amazing. Almost right now talking about it. I mean, it's to impact. If one other person felt a sigh of relief, it was worth every moment that I laboring on that issue. So
it really makes me feel good that you have such a good response to your constituents. I feel that is so important for any representative. And so how can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. So, you know, I have for on the legislative side, if folks are wondering, it's just yasmeen.trudeau@ledge.wa.gov. Please reach out. You know, again, any bill ideas, any issues people are facing, honestly, I think those are the most important issues we can be working on, right? Because they're responsive to a particular concern. But also I wanted to add that if folks have issues with like services, right? If people are not getting callbacks from state agencies, it doesn't have to be about legislation. Please email my office and we can absolutely help you. If you want to know anything about the campaign side, which is separate, that's People for Yasmeen. You know, peopleforyasmeen.com. You can go onto my website and peopleforyasmeen@gmail.com to email me directly. All of those avenues are available. I'm also, I guess I should add, I'm on Facebook.
Okay.
Well, both on the, it's Yasmeen Trudeau for Senate on the campaign side, but I also have a formal Facebook and Twitter as well for the Senate side.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. And I would like to close with just a thought here. Again, it's kind of like, I'm not quite sure how to describe this, but it's people who kind of misunderstand what the question is and what it might imply. And so this is a story about a woman who was out shopping for a vacuum cleaner. Okay. She went into the store and was looking around and this one, that one. And the salesman comes up to her and he says, well, madam, this vacuum cleaner will cut your work in half. And so she says, oh, great. I'll take two. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. This is really wonderful. And I mean it. Any opportunity to engage directly with the constituents. And when I saw Power for the People and I was in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to continue this after the election. So I may call on you again.
I would love that. I would really like for folks to know that this is a, you know, I have an open door and I want to work with my community and right. You are. So yeah. I appreciate it so much.
And of course, my goal is to let people know about civics, about
absolutely
what our government is. Yeah.
One of the reasons that I decided to go in is, you know, working in the state legislature the last couple of years, but not as an elected, is it's a very opaque place. And I think that contributes to distrust.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I said, you know, whatever folks want to ask and talk to me about, let's do it.
I am a voter.
I am a voter.
I will vote.
I will vote.
Even in an off-year election.
Even in an off-year election.